Welcome back to Jules on the Hustle. Today I have a very special guest and friend, Tim Howard, the greatest goalkeeper in American soccer history. He's currently in Memphis. He is the most capped goalkeeper of all time for the U.S. men's national team with 121 caps. In 2014, he set a World Cup record for the most saves in a match, 15 against Belgium. And in 2014, he also published his book, The Keeper, A Life of Saving Goals and Achieving. I cannot wait to read that. But without further ado, our American soccer hero, Tim Howard. Tim, I'm very honored for you to be here. You're obviously the greatest goalkeeper in American soccer history. I'm talking to a goat. This is pretty awesome. So you are the goalkeeper, owner, and sporting director for the USL Championship Club Memphis 901 FC. And how are you liking it so far?
I'm loving it. Obviously, right now, in this coronavirus pandemic and in terms of social distancing, my main focus and concern is the players and my role as owner and sporting director. So, you know, keeping them fit, which is secondary. Obviously, we want to keep them healthy, which is important. Physically, we want to keep them fit for when we start up again. And then, obviously, from a mental health standpoint, making sure that they have everything they need that we can, try and provide for them and keep them in good spirits.
Absolutely. So, growing up, I read that your talent was recognized from the very start. What got you into soccer in the first place?
My mom. I was a rambunctious kid. I was 6 years old. My mom said, listen, pick something because you got to get out of the house. So she gave me a few options, and soccer became my first love at the time. And, I enjoyed it. I ran around. I was energetic, scoring goals and sliding in the mud and on the grass and celebrating with my friends, and I enjoyed it. There was something about the game that really captivated me.
That's so funny you say that, because growing up, the reason why I got into tennis was because my dad was like, I don't want you to be one of those kids that after school comes home and plays video games. So I'm like a tomboy. I'm not really a girly girl. I wouldn't come home and play with my Barbies. I would come home and like play video games. And so he's like, I don't want you to be one of those kids. So we're going to sign you up for an after school tennis program. And that's how I got started.
Awesome.
Whatever it takes, right?
Right.
So when did you know you wanted to pursue it seriously? Was there like a moment, or did it just your love just grow for it?
I think there, I don't know if there was a singular moment. I remember writing in one of my middle school projects or journals, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'm like, I want to be a professional athlete. I didn't even know what that meant at the time. I just think it was this pipe dream that I was like, I don't know. I love soccer and I love watching professional athletes, so I'm going to be one. And it's hard to pinpoint an exact time, but yes, my love for it did grow. The better teams that I played on, the more intense competitions that I played in, it just continued to whet my appetite for more and more and more. And I love the competition side. I mean, there were times that the losses were tough and the wins were great, but none of it all drove me to continue to want more and more.
Yeah, I actually read that you also played basketball pretty competitively. You were like the star of your high school team. What can't the man do? It's pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. Basketball, I said soccer was my first love when I first started playing, but yes, basketball became everything to me. I loved it. I was way better at soccer, but even now people ask me, like, if you weren't playing soccer, you didn't have a career in soccer, what would you do? And I absolutely work in the NBA in some front office somewhere, because basketball is truly amazing. So yeah, we had a good old team back then in Jersey.
But I mean, I feel like the fact that you played maybe basketball and soccer, I don't know if you played any other sports, kind of helped you become the athlete you are today. I feel like playing many different sports really helps an athlete develop like all parts of their bodies. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think athletes shouldn't be restricted to one sport or one specialty. I think it's important. And even if you're not great at that sport, I think it's good to play it and to, for me, it was like my hand-eye coordination as a goalkeeper helped me in basketball. And I stealing the ball, rebounding, I could be everywhere all the time. And so it helped. And I think it's important for kids to play multiple sports. I think it teaches you valuable lessons. Each sport you know, you have to give up yourself, and, you know, there's a certain, I was the best at soccer, but I wasn't the best at basketball per se, and so I had to learn how to fit myself into that team, and I think those are valuable lessons.
Who's your team? The Knicks?
Yes,
of course. Let's go! It is so nice to talk to other Knicks fans, and we're really a rare breed right now.
It's hard being a Knicks fan in the last 10 years, but yeah. I grew up in some of the good old days and the mid-90s, and so I appreciate them more than most.
I gotta ask you: do you like Carmelo Anthony? Do you miss him a little bit?
Love Carmelo Anthony.
Oh yes,
he's just such an incredible scorer. Yeah. He's like poetry in motion, and he was very good for the Knicks. The year he won the scoring title, I was so proud and honored that he was playing for our club.
Yeah, I just feel like New York hasn't had much hope since the days of Carmelo Anthony, and yeah. I think even though we weren't winning too much, even during the Carmelo Mania times, I feel like he gave us New Yorkers or New York fans something to be excited or hopeful about, and that's what I miss most.
100%. I agree with you.
I was actually at the game where he scored his record amount of points. I want to say it was 63 points, and so the whole, you know, arena, Madison Square Garden, just lit up. It was pretty exciting.
Well, when times are good, there's no better place to play than the Garden.
Exactly. Oh, man, that is a special place to be. So fast forwarding a bit, you are the most capped goalkeeper of all time for the U.S. men's national team with 121. Can you just kind of discuss the feeling of representing the U.S.?
Well, I think it's every kid's dream, you know, when you play, I know other sports, but, you know, more specifically soccer, when you grow up playing soccer, no matter where you want to play or how you want to do it, the ultimate goal is to represent your country. Anywhere around the world, that's the goal of any kid. And I was able to do it quite a lot. And I played in 3 World Cups and went to 3 World Cups and played 121 times for my country. And the first game was you know, as special as the 121st game and everything in between. And so I'm very fortunate to have played that long. It was always such an incredibly proud moment that was never lost on me, even though I played so many times. It was like every time you heard the national anthem and you wore that shirt, it meant the world.
Did you kind of get, like, chills during the national anthem? For some reason, I get chills when, you know, like, when I was playing college tennis, that was the only time I was really playing for a team. Tennis is weird in that regard, you know, it's all individual until college tennis. So, I don't know, somehow wearing my Virginia gear and having that national anthem, even though I wasn't representing the U.S., I don't know, I just felt like I was representing something larger than myself or bigger than myself, representing a school, the fans, the team, and I don't know, that feels really nice.
Sure, no, being a part of something and being, you know, being counted on and feeling like there's all this weight on your shoulders because you have an obligation to represent your school or your country is massive, but there were times where I had, you know, goosebumps and chills because of the national anthem, because of the moment. But even if I didn't have the chills, I was filled at that singular moment when the national anthem was playing. I was filled with just an enormous amount of pride and a feeling of responsibility.
Yeah. Wow. Getting chills thinking about you on the field. Just, wow. So you participated in both the 2010 and 2014 FIFA World Cups, starting in all the matches. I like how in soccer, they call it matches, right? Tennis, yes. They call it matches. And so yes. Do some people call it games and you're like, nope, you got it wrong?
I mean, you can call it matches, games, pitch, field, boots, cleats, you know, they all kind
anything.
Of
Yeah, and you set the world record for the most saves in a match with 15 against Belgium. You know, a goalkeeper kind of reminds me of a tennis player because, you know, you're kind of in there or out there by yourself, and I feel like the pressure is on you. I mean, I feel like it would be pressure. Is it really pressure?
Yeah, look, I think it's a very good analogy. I mean, you're out there all by yourself, and you got to get used to it. You know, there's... You're part of a team and you're directing a team, but ultimately it is a very lonely place. There's some moments of glory, don't get me wrong, but oftentimes it's you're out there by yourself and you got to figure things out very quickly. And so it's you know, I think it's not for the faint-hearted. I think you have to have a strong mentality. You know, you have to have the ability to forget the last great play you made and forget the last mistake you made and keep moving forward to the next play. And you know, you could probably say that about a lot of sports and a lot of positions, but certainly goalkeeper for sure.
And I think that's what makes it so rewarding, because when things go well, like, the spotlight is on you. When you make an incredible save, it's like Tim Howard in the spotlight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But then obviously when things don't go as well, you feel like the world has come down on you, maybe. No, I just give you a lot of respect, a lot of credit. And naturally, as a tennis player, I like to draw those comparisons.
For sure. For sure, I dig it.
Did you ever play any other positions besides a goalkeeper?
Yeah, you know, coming up, when you play soccer, you play for, like, your school team, your club team, regional team, state team, national team. There's so many teams that you can play for, and so many games that, you know, soccer plays more games than any youth sport that I know of. And I always tell goalkeepers, like, get out and play in the field, you know, go play forward or midfield. And it's good. It's good, if nothing else, as a mental break, but you learn so much, and the game is adapted that players have to be very good with their feet, and their skill level has to be high. So I think it pays dividends for goalkeepers to play other positions than I certainly did.
Absolutely. You kind of expand your skill set.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's interesting, when I'm getting ready to play tennis, we tend to like to play a little soccer, and we use the tennis net as, you know, the net for, and it's hard to get the ball over, kicking it or bumping it. You can't use your hands. I hate not using my hands. Because in tennis, it's all about the feel and using the hands, so not using them kind of feels off.
Right.
Can you discuss the emotions that go on during, like, a shootout? I always, like, wondered. I mean, watching that seems so stressful.
Mm-hmm. It's a stressful moment. In fact, I've always explained to people as the opposite. It for me, there was a finality to it. When you have to understand, when you get to a penalty shootout, you have played 90 minutes, mm-hmm. and then you've played 30 more minutes of overtime, and it's on a knife's edge, right? So obviously the game's tied. Any mistake, any moment of glory is going to win it for one team or the other. So there's all this pressure that you felt, not only for the 90 minutes, but now in overtime, you're like, oh my God, any wrong move and it could be the end. And so you're so emotionally drained by the time it gets to 120 minutes and then it gets to the shootout. You're so emotionally drained that for me, I was always like, great, you know what? I believe in myself. I've got a good ability on penalties. And win or lose, this thing's going to be over, because right now I can't take anymore. I'm just so drained. And so I never really felt that as pressure, because with the five shots, you're almost thinking in your head, until you don't save one, you're like, I can save one. And if I save one or two, you know, we'll probably win. And so there's always this, it's not anxiety, there's always this moment of looking forward and thinking, I can do this. And so it's only after the fact that you're like, oh man, we lost, you know?
Right.
So I never felt the pressure. I understand how watching it, I feel pressure because I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm dependent on someone else. But when I'm in that moment, it's not a ton of pressure, to be honest.
And that's interesting, because, again, me drawing a similarity here, but a comparison with tennis. So both of these sports aren't exactly timed. Like, I mean, they are timed. Your sport is timed, but when we go in tennis to a third set tiebreak, it comes down to that one tiebreaker. You're so tired. You already played almost three full sets, and that 1 7-point tiebreaker will determine the match.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, in the NBA, or, you know, you're timed, you have four quarters, and whoever does best in those, obviously, you can go to overtime there, but it's, like, feels like it's more about the time, whereas in tennis, it can come down to, like, one specific thing, and, yeah, for me, you're right, now I'm thinking about it, I'm so tired at that point, I'm kind of excited that it's almost over.
One way or the other, it's gonna be over, I know, that's what I'm saying.
Hey, when this whole thing blows over, we got to get on the tennis court.
I've been telling you that.
We've been discussing this.
Listen, I will hold my own. You'll beat me, but I'll hold my own and I'll run you around.
I got to know, I need a breakdown of your game. Give me a little scouting report. I need a little head start here.
You know what? I am uber athletic. I'll never, ever not chase the ball down to my detriment at times, because then I'm breathing way too heavy. My backhand needs some work. I have a sliced backhand, and I just kind of guide it in there, but it's not a whole lot of not a lot of attack on my backhand.
So it doesn't have enough like oomph on it.
Oh no, there's no pop, no oomph.
No pop. How about that serve?
It's all right. My serve, to be honest, is better. I mean, obviously, when I don't play for long periods of time, it's not great, but when I get it going, it's not too bad actually.
The serve is one of those shots where if you take a few days off, you just lose that rhythm. It's so frustrating.
Very frustrating. I played with a friend not long ago, and I was feeling really good about my serve. And it reminded me halfway through the set that every time I was foot faulting every time. And I was like, that's the least of my worries. That is a foot fault. Like, I'm just, I can get good velocity, and I get it over in the box. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, the hardest part is making it into that box. I mean, foot fault. I mean, look at Serena. She even got mad when she got called foot fault on. Did you see that match? At the U.S. Open? Yeah. So, yeah, we're not worried about... I won't call foot faults unless you're beating me. Then I'll call some foot faults.
I appreciate that.
So I saw that you published a book in 2014. I'm going to order it and read it. I'm so excited. The Keeper, A Life of Saving Goals and Achieving Them. Like, what inspired you to write that?
Well, I was coming towards the end. I mean, it was... obviously, the World Cup in 2014 was certainly the pinnacle of my career. I still had a few more years left. You know, I wasn't completely done. You know, so I thought that was a really good time to do it. If there was an opportunity, because, you know, after writing it, in the next 5 years, something amazing happened, I was able to add some chapters to it or write a new one, sure. But I thought 2014 was definitely, in my career in that moment, was a great opportunity to sit back and reflect, for sure.
So you were writing this book while you were still competing, obviously, right? Did you find that as kind of therapy? Like, it was relaxing at the end of the day to come back to your book? Like, I find, like, not multitasking, but having something going on while you're competing,
yeah,
it really takes your mind off for a few hours, relaxes you. Is that how you felt?
It certainly allowed me to delve deeper into my past and to, you know, start to strip away a few of the layers. It was certainly a labor of love. I'll give you that. It was, it was a long process. But yeah, again, I was able to compartmentalize and, you know, obviously go to training every day and come home and sit down and get my thoughts out and obviously try and put those in the proper order. And it was good. I was very happy when it was done.
Yeah.
And the finished product came out just the way I wanted to.
Are you happy with how people are responding to the book?
Yeah, people seem to really like it, and obviously because of that, I'm appreciative. It's ultimately my story, my sacrifices, and so I think it'd be pretty bad if they didn't like it. So I'm glad they do.
Yeah. Now, looking back, what advice would you give to 12-year-old Tim Howard? I know that's always a difficult question, but I'm very curious. You have so much experience. I'm just... wondering.
I think that it's a tough question. It's one that I've answered one or two times, but I think ultimately when we're young, we worry about what's to come, we worry about what people are going to say, we worry about all of those things. And I think the advice that I would give is you know, keep your head down and work as hard as humanly possible and try as best you can to drown out the outside noise, because there will be a lot of it, and most of it, 99% of it, will just be rubbish and garbage and not warranted. And so, easy to say as a 41-year-old, you know, ex-athlete, but my advice to the younger players and even my younger self would be, yeah, just head down, work hard. I mean, I don't think there's any way to duplicate hard work and repetition and hours in the gym or hours on the court, hours on the field. There's nothing can replicate that. So, for me, it's about putting that time in and about trying to drown out the outside noise.
Yes. So I have 2 points to that. The outside noise can really get to you. I don't know how it is in soccer, but for tennis, we have a lot of bettors. And I get some horrible messages from fans that bet on me to win or maybe to lose. And I mean, and it's not just directed towards me, it's directed towards my family, and it's like, it's a lot of tennis players have really suffered with these messages, and we try to report them, but do you guys get your fair share of, obviously the media is all over, but do you get your personal messages?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I think there's messages from fans, from your own fans, and from Robin's fans. There's, you know, the media has their own way of building you up and tearing you down, and then, you know, certain people went out with social media becoming so prevalent. You know, that's an avenue for people also to get at you. So I just, again, as I said, there's a lot of distraction. 99% of it doesn't matter, and so it just depends on who you are as a person, as an athlete, what you believe and what you take in.
Exactly.
I have some good friends who I've given that advice to, and yet they live and die based on people's opinion on social media, and it's a very hard thing to see for them.
Yes, it's social media is really, it's not everything, but it's a lot. It's always in your face, you know?
Yeah.
Right before bed, when you first wake up, it's just always right there. Then another thing, I totally agree, like, it's all about the hours that you put in the field, on the court. But then what I would tell myself back when I was 12, I would say, take those days off, you know? If you feel burnt out, take it. The mental side of the game, at least for me, I'm learning, is almost as important as, you know, just being out there on the court. And it's high pressure what we do, and it's like very emotionally, physically, mentally draining. So taking care of your mental health is just essential, really.
So essential, yeah.
And so what's something that the average fan wouldn't know about the life of an elite soccer player like yourself, behind the scenes?
You know what? It's very true, this statement. My life is very boring. I think there's some times when it looks exciting and can be portrayed as such, but, you know, wait, during my playing days, I spent a lot of time on the couch, resting and recovering, not doing much of anything. Probably the highlight of my day, you know, is walking downtown and grabbing a cup of coffee and then hanging out and going back up to my apartment, you know, and that was it, you know, because it was so focused on rest and recovery and making sure that my body was right, my mind was right for training, number one, the next day, and then ultimately the game on the weekend. So that's probably, I think some players live the life of the glitz and the glamour in the nightclubs, and they post it, and people think that that's what it is, but it's not.
Yeah, and that links back to the whole social media thing. Social media, you kind of show your best self. It kind of reflects your best self, and because on like TV or in videos on social media, you see like the highlights of a person's life, you don't realize that's like not the majority of the life. I mean, we're mainly recovering, and on a Saturday night, your friends may be out, but you're in bed at 9 o'clock because you have a game or a match the next day. So I think that there's good that comes with it and bad. And I mean, sometimes you wish you could be out with your friends, but I mean, that comes with the territory of being a pro. So
that's true.
And lastly, I want to ask about, I know you have a very close connection with your children.
Yes.
What's your wish for them as they grow up? Are they going to be athletes? Does your daughter play basketball?
Basketball and soccer, yeah.
Basketball and soccer.
Yeah, and my son is a very good athlete. He's kind of gone more down the music route, producing and writing and performing. So my dream for my children is that they find a passion, and that they have a drive to want to do that every day. I don't really care what that is, you know. I think with that passion comes happiness and fulfillment, and, you know, as long as they have something that keeps them fulfilled and sustained, that's all I care about. And whatever they tell us, you know, myself and their mother, that is, will you know, help push them in that direction everywhere we can. So at times it's sports, and other times it's the arts, and whatever it is, it doesn't matter to me as long as they're happy.
Aww, I love that. That's really sweet. Well, Tim, It's been an honor having you on here, and thank you for shedding some light and advice on me and the listeners of Jules on the Hustle. I know it took us a little time to set this whole thing up. I mean, this is how we're going to be communicating during quarantine, so we make do with what we got.
Yeah, well, you're doing an amazing job. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure, and I hope that in these trying times you are very safe, and look forward to catching up with you again.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you. We will touch base very soon. I'll come around and check on you. You stay safe and healthy. And
we'll get our game of tennis in one day, I promise.
Yes. Okay.
Or both.
We're going to, yes, tennis, golf, not golf, tennis, soccer, all of it. I'm very excited. When this whole thing ends and we resume normal life again, we will do it.
You got it.
Thank you so much.
You will.
Have a great day. Well, that was fun. I feel like Tim is such a humble and down-to-earth person. You would never know how accomplished he was, how illustrious his career has been over the many, many years he competed. Now, I really loved his answers about what advice he would give to 12-year-old Tim and what, you know, something maybe the average fan wouldn't know about the life of an elite soccer athlete. Those are two really, you know, deep questions that you really wouldn't be able to answer unless you were actually the athlete and had really been through everything that Tim has been through. Ironically, today is International Goalkeeper Day, and I did not know this until right now, so I feel like it's pretty cool that I got to talk to Tim today. But anyway, thanks for tuning in, guys. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jules L. Baba, at JulesElBaba, for more updates. See you guys next time on Jules on the Hustle.